You know, as often as Vic and Sade has been brought up on this series, which has been on now over 7 years, I don't think there's anybody's name who's been heard more than Clarence Hartzell. And it usually, when it's brought up in connection with Vic and Sade, but I know you did a lot of other radio shows back in the 30s and 40s. Tell me a few of the characters you played, or shows you were on.
Well, I was on those Websters. I did Mr. Watt. In fact, I went to the coast from Chicago with those Websters. And then I was on Lum and Abner, doing a part of Ben Withers, the old veterinarian. And, I did a lot of things, a lot of the different serials, the small parts in them that came in every once in a while. I was the original Pappy Yoakum on Dogpatch. John Hodiak was Little Abner at that time. He did the part of Little Abner. That was way back. And, I was on Bachelor's Children and Tom Mix and The Sky King. Straight Arrow.
They were all out of Chicago, were they?
Yes, most of them were, yes. I did a few out on the coast, but most of them were here, as you know. This was the center of the old serials.
I asked Billy Idelson when I saw him on the coast a few months ago if he remembered his audition for the part of Rush on Vic and Sade, and he said no, he didn't. He said that was whatever it wasn't very eventful because he didn't remember it. But he said he remembered yours.
Yeah.
They thought they were going to bring in the character Uncle Fletcher, because at first it was just a three-character program. And he said a number of people auditioned, and he remembers that after you gave your reading, people were screaming, rolling on the floor laughing. Did you have a preconceived notion of who Uncle Fletcher should be and what he should sound like?
No. Fact of the matter is, I had never heard of Uncle Fletcher. Vic and Sade had been a favorite show of mine, but I had never heard of the character of Uncle Fletcher. And I remember I went down to the Mart the morning I was called down and went into the drugstore for a cup of coffee, and Ted McMurray was sitting there. Ted was a producer and director for NBC at that time. And he said, "What are you here for?" And I said, "I don't know." I said, "I've called in for an audition." He said, "You don't know what it's for?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, let me tell you. It's for Vic and Sade." I said, "You got to be kidding." "Well, what's on Vic and Sade? What kind of a part would anybody do on that?" He said, "Well, they're going to bring in a part of Uncle Fletcher." And I said, "Who's Uncle Fletcher?" And then he began to tell me one thing. He said, "Well, Uncle Fletcher is Sade's uncle that lives out in Iowa somewhere, I think. And he's the kind of a fella that one Christmas, he wrote Sade that he was sending them his Christmas present, and it was a piano. And the keyboard would be dropped off by a friend of his who had a pickup truck. And the legs of the piano were in a barn on a farm out in Iowa somewhere. And the strings, a fellow said he had them in his garage. And this is where you can find the strings and everything. This was Uncle Fletcher." So that gave me some idea of what an eccentric guy he was. But Fletcher was a character that everyone has in his family. He does stupid things, but he's loved. And people love him, and they wouldn't hurt his feelings for the world, but they tolerate him. And they don't like to laugh at him, but when they see his prototype in a series, you know, then they can laugh. You see, the association. And they associate Uncle Fletcher with someone, whether it's male or female, in their family, whom they love to the extent that they would not openly laugh at them and ridicule them, and they treat them very seriously, as Sade treated Uncle Fletcher. But Fletcher stands for that one person.
Uncle Fletcher didn't live in the little house halfway up on the next block. He lived in a boarding house. For a while, at least, right?
Yes, he lived in Mrs. Keller's boarding house. The half-wit woman, they used to refer to her.
You didn't add later died, so I assume she's still around. You used to add later died after everybody.
Married a woman 21 years old, went into the powdered rabbit business, and later died. Mrs. Keller was always bugged Uncle Fletcher because she took a little too good care of him. One time, she was going away on a trip and was going to be gone for 2 weeks, and he came over complaining to Sade. What was the matter was that she was afraid that he wasn't going to get enough to eat, so she cooked all his meals ahead of time for 2 weeks. Now, his breakfast Monday morning was going to be on the kitchen cupboard. His lunch was going to be on the radiator. His supper that night was going to be in the pantry on the third shelf. The next breakfast was going to be on top of the piano, and so on for 2 weeks. And this not only bugged Fletch, but it bugged Sade, too, because she, too, was protective of the old guy.
I remember one program in which you and Sade, I think everybody, Vic had gone to a meeting of the Sacred Stars of the Milky Way, in which Vic was a Sky Brother, I believe.
Yes.
And Rush had gone to the Bijou to see Gloria Golden in something. And you had dropped by in to see Sade, and you were discussing with her the idea of giving your landlady a piece of railroad iron of the track, which you thought would be a marvelous gift for Christmas because she could put it by her door and she could use it either as a doorstop or as a shoe scraper.
Yes.
Did she enjoy that?
yes, she enjoyed it until one night she stumbled over it in the dark. Fletch was a promoter, too, of hyena grease, as you remember. Finest preparation in this earth for smearing on your shoes. And he was also a very good friend of Gumpox, the garbage man.
That's Jake Gumpox. Jake, I believe it was.
Could have been. And, of course, Gumpox's horse, Howard. And I distinctly remember when Howard got married to a horse down the block, or at least Gumpox was going to have a ceremony for it. And Fletch would ride with Gumpox on the garbage wagon every once in a while, pass the time away. He had a lot of cronies, people that he knew and would recall at the slightest provocation. One was Walter M. Veepy, O.J. Geaver.
Was it your friends Robert and Slobbert Hink, or was it Vic's? They were the identical twins, Robert and Slobbert.
I think they were Vic's friends. Yes, Robert and Slobbert Hink. Fletch's friend was Richigan Fishigan from Sishigan, Michigan, I believe, who married Jane Payne from Bain, Maine. And they rented an apartment at the Bright Kentucky Hotel on the upstairs floor. The only thing was there was no stairway going up there. As Fletch says, you can't expect no self-respecting woman to want to shinny up and down a drainpipe.
Weren't you walking to nearby towns to break in new pairs of shoes for a friend of yours? At least once I remember that. You were doing that favor for somebody.
Fletch did so many things. People ask me about things that he did or the family did, and it takes a while before they spark a memory, you know.
I remember what Rush was doing that night. He was not at the Bijou the night you were discussing the idea of using buying the piece of railroad iron for your landlady. He was down at the Y watching the fat man play handball.
Play handball, yes. Mm-hmm. He often went down there to watch the fat man play handball. And he and Smelly Clark. And, Smelly.
Did we mention Bluetooth Johnson?
No. Bluetooth Johnson was another friend of Rush's. And Smelly Clark had a fabulous Uncle Strap, do you remember? Smelly Clark's Uncle Strap said this and said that, and that, of course, made it so.
When Rush went into the Army, I don't remember who took over. A new character was developed, I believe.
We had a young chap from Evanston that took over Rush's part, only I don't believe they called him Rush.
As I remember, Rush was an adopted boy, and the new boy was a nephew.
Could have been. Could have been. Rush at the time was, of course, in the... that is, Billy Idelson was, of course, with the Navy during the war. And as Paul Reimer used to say, he was away shooting at Japanese people.
Clarence, I wish you'd tell the story you told me before we began taping about the time you appeared on the Today Show with Hugh Downs.
Paul would write to us every once in a while. And he had made several trips to the hospital over a period of years. And he'd say, I'm in the hospital, send me some funny stuff. And we were in the antique business, and we used to buy these old photograph albums and take the pictures out and send them to Paul. And Paul would do fabulous things with them. He'd send them as greeting cards to his many friends. And sometimes he would cut out their face and insert his own face in these ridiculous old-fashioned clothes, you know, how screamingly funny it would be.
WBAI, New York.
And one morning, I got a call from Paul, and he said, Hugh Downs is in town, and he wants to do a little thing about Vic and Sade. And he said, I am no performer, and I told him that you're the one that he should call. I think he wants to kind of talk over Vic and Sade. Would you go down? I said, sure, Paul, I'll go. So he said, I'd appreciate it. So Hughes, the writer, called me, and we set up an appointment. And our idea was, I had a transcription of a Vic and Sade show. So we were going to start with that, with the theme and so on and so forth, as if we were going right into the show. Then Barbara and I, Barbara would be taking the part of Vern, because Vern was out of town at the time, Vern. And we would just seg you into our live voices, picking up this same script, you see, which we did, and it was quite effective. Well, that morning, early that morning of the show, Paul was taken to the hospital again, and he asked for a television set to be brought into his room so he could watch the show. Well, he watched the show, and I heard the nurse said he enjoyed it immensely and laughed heartily at some of the things. And then they took the set away, and he decided to take a nap. So he went to sleep, and a little later, the nurse looked into his room, and he didn't waken again. So that was the last thing, I guess, that Paul has witnessed to his performance in his own show.
What sort of a man was Paul Reimer? I asked Billy Idelson, and he said, I found him, he said, very nice to me. But he said he seemed quite withdrawn. He was a difficult man to know.
Well, Paul lived with this show for years and years, as you know, and as any writer knows, that can be take an awful lot out of you. And He more or less had to be somewhat of a recluse in order to get the scripts out. And Paul was a perfectionist. He didn't want anyone fooling with his scripts. And he didn't want anything changed, for very good reasons. But Paul was a very fine man, a rather quiet man, gentle man, and yet with the most outstanding sense of humor in his real life of anyone I've ever known.
I think it was a sense of humor, certainly, but it was a most wonderful sense of the ridiculous. There are a lot of people, I think, who have a sense of humor and no sense of the ridiculous.
He could make this sublime out of the ridiculous. Just by one word or a small phrase, he could turn a seemingly serious situation into something screamingly funny.
What was Art Van Harvey like?
Art was a very fine actor. A very sensitive actor, and with a terrific sense of humor, very kind man, and he had to be to have such a sympathetic feeling for this character of Vic, and he was a lot of fun. He had a terrific sense of humor in real life also.
We haven't mentioned Gus Plink, the town drunk.
Him, I don't remember. I don't recall him. Gus who?
Gus Plink. Somehow he sticks in my mind. It was the town drunk. How about the brick mash man?
The brick mush man?
He was always calling on Sade.
I don't recall him too well either. I recall Ruthie Stembottom.
Ruthie Stembottom, as I recall, was going with Sade quite often to Yamilton's for the wash rag sale.
Yes, and they always got their change mixed up. They'd always borrow from each other, and one would pay the lunch, and the other had to pay her back, and she'd borrow 10 cents, and then the other couldn't give her change for a quarter, and by the time they got home, they never knew where they were, who owed who what.
Do you remember where Sade and Ruthie would have had their lunch?
Possibly at the little tiny petite pheasant feather tea shoppy. And that's the only one I can recall.
Do you remember Sade serving beef punkles?
Yeah, beef punkles. And sometimes they would invite Fletcher over for dinner, and after dinner, Fletch would tell Sade how good everything was, and then Sade, of course, would deprecate her own cooking. Potatoes were a little too mealy. And Fletch would say, yes, 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 they were. And this is the beef didn't get quite done. Yes, yes.
I think younger listeners tonight should understand that the people, you know, we're mentioning Ruthie Stembottom and Mr. Gumpax, the garbage man, never actually appeared on Vic and Sade.
Oh, no.
They were about the only time about as close as you'd come to meeting them is when Sade would yell "Yoo-hoo."
Yes, but you know, in radio, those offstage characters were somehow the strongest. They always.
I saw all of them. I could describe them to you.
Yes. Uh huh. I think that's the difference between television and radio, and I don't want to get into that, but is that the radio listener, built up his own impression of the characters, and they usually stayed with him. Whereas with television, it's all built up for him, so he can forget it the next minute.
Art Van Harvey died a number of years ago. Do you ever see Bernadine Flynn? She lives in this area.
She's living down in Clay City, Illinois, now I understand. I haven't seen her for a number of years. And I haven't seen Billy, I guess, for about 6 or 7 years. I remember, speaking of the announcer, finally, P&G had an announcer from New York cut in with the commercials. So when it came time for the commercial, New York would cut in, and the announcer would come from New York. But shortly after that, Paul had his mother visiting him from down around Bloomington, Illinois. She lived there. And he brought her down to the studio to see the broadcast. And she brought a friend of hers with her from Bloomington. And during the show, when it came time for the commercial to cut in from New York, the local announcer was standing by. You know, they always had a standby announcer in case something happened to the line from New York to Chicago. Was standing by the control box there. So Paul's mother said to her friend, she says, "You see that man there?" She says, "Mm-hmm." She says, "He's in New York."
Do you remember your friend? I'm sure it was your friend rather than Vic's, who invented the bicycle that could say mother, mama.
No, I don't remember that. I don't remember that.
Most of your friends were over at the Bright Kentucky Hotel, huh?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They stayed at the Bright Kentucky Hotel, including the one whose name I can't recall, whose bedroom the train went right by the Bright Kentucky, you know. And every time they go by and his window is open, they'd throw a hunk of coal in his bedroom, wake him up.
It was Mr. Buhler who was Vic's boss. That was the man who pulled his own teeth for some reason. I don't know why, but I remember he always pulled his own teeth.
Yeah, he pulled his own teeth. I can't remember the man that was always sending Vic a telegram, "Please wire $1,000. I've just been hit by a fast passenger train in Omaha, Iowa." Could it be Y.I.Y. Flirch? Then there was a character by the name of Skeeber. I don't remember his initials. And, of course, Flirch was one of Fletch's friends, had founded the Missouri State Home for the Tall. And, let's see.
I forgot to say that we were in Chicago, we are in Chicago tonight, which was the great radio hub back in the 30s and right into the 40s. And I know that there's still some people who live here from that era. Myrtle Vale is one. Are there any others that we might know that you see or you simply know are still here?
Well, I know some of the announcers are here. And some of the actors, Mari Copeland was an actor, did a lot of work in these serials. And I don't get into Chicago often enough to... The only time I see them is when they're doing commercials on TV. Of course, I see a number of them coming from the coast, and actors from the coast. Who worked here, I worked with.
What did you play on Tom Mix? Or I listened to that religiously. I know you weren't Wrangler, because he had very distinctive voice, Wrangler.
I usually played an old character, an old desert rat, or prospector, or somebody like that. I always played old men for some reason or other.
Tom Mix was never actually played by Tom Mix, was it?
No, I think Curly Bradley, I believe, played Tom Mix. I had several of my own shows on NBC. They never got to the commercial state, unfortunately. One was called Doc Duke and the Colonel. A little summer replacement thing where three old codgers in a small town get together on Saturday morning and discuss the other members of the community. Another was called Waterloo Junction. It was a little country hotel. It was run by two partners,
Speedford
and Hale, and Cliff Subir did the part of Speedford. Then, let's see. Remember Yogi Orgeson? Yogi used to be here in Chicago. And,
maybe you can tell me something that I don't remember ever asking a radio actor. When was it and why was it that radio moved out of Chicago to New York and the West Coast?
That is the $64,000 question, I'll tell you. I think the same thing
is happening
to television, actually. Prices to produce these shows, the costs, got to be quite a factor. Dramatic programs were dropped off in favor of audience participation shows that cost far less. And the people who provide the prizes, of course,
underwrite a great deal
of it. I think the same thing is happening to television. A lot of people wanted to move to the coast. They wanted to live there. They wanted to live in California. Producers, writers, actors. And in this business, no man is an island. If a writer moves out of town, then he's going to take a certain percentage of people with him. Or if a producer goes out of town, he's going to take a following. Or a director. Anyone in a key position who decides to he's going to live somewhere else, he's going to drag a certain number of people along with him. I think this was a factor also.
We didn't tell them what Uncle Fletcher is doing these days. Where could they find you if they're in the Chicago vicinity?
Don't call me, I'll call you. No. I'm helping my wife run an antique shop out in West Dundee, Illinois. At 715 West Main Street. We're closed right now until April 1st. We close during the winter. And,
then they come and hammer on the door, they could buy, you know, an old Clara Lou and M spoon, couldn't they?
Oh, sure, they might do that, or a Shirley Temple mug. Then, on my off hours, I raise wildflowers and photograph wildflowers and photograph nature. And I'm interested in preserving as much as I can get corny and say our heritage, particularly in the field of wildflowers. And I also write a little music, a little poetry, for my own amusement. You know, a fella gave me a book not long ago. It's called The Wildflowers of the Chicago Area. It was published in 1937. Now that's, how many years ago is that? 28 years ago? Well, this book listed the rare species of plants that could be found in the Chicago area. Believe it or not, in such locations as the Calumet River, Ravenswood, the Skokie, the Waukegan prairies. Now, these areas are all gone. They're all built over. You couldn't go there in any of these places and find a dandelion today, much less a cypripedium, a lady slipper. So what's going to happen in the next 30 years? Are we going to lose that many more of these things? They're digging them up. They're bulldozing them up. They're covering them with concrete. They're damming up the rivers and covering them up with water. What are our children, our grandchildren, going to have to look forward to? I'm not talking about pollution. That's somebody else's area. I'm talking about creating a respect and a love for these things that they will be preserved for posterity. And that's what I'm doing. We've established a small botanical garden in our area, 8.5 acres of virgin woods. And we're reestablishing the wildflowers that have disappeared out of this area due to pasturing, cutting down trees, logging, and this sort of thing. And we hope that we can contribute a little bit to the beauty of this country.
I think if it's, being it's not too late, Clarence, we'll take a walk over by the railroad station and watch the trains go by, which I think was one of your favorite pastimes. I'm Richard Lamparski. Clarence Hartzell has been my guest. We've been talking here tonight in Chicago about Vic and Sade. I want to thank him very much for the interview, and thank you for listening. I hope you all have a real nice evening.